Welcome to the Plant Grow Reap Podcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Plant Grow Reap. My name is Christian Schnu. I'm a senior associate at Aintree Group Legal, and I'm here with one of our young up-and-coming lawyers, Liam McColl. We're here to discuss the exciting world of debt recovery. Liam, how are you going?
I'm great. Thank you, Christian. I love debt recovery.
If I was to buy a Liam McColl flat pack and open it up so I can build my very own Liam McColl, I'd open it up and just find
letters of demand,
yeah. Dry, subtle wit, and debt recovery. That's good. Well, it seems like we're talking to the right person then. What are we going to talk about?
Today we are, as you can imagine, talking about debt recovery. We're going to talk about the importance of debt recovery as for businesses as well. I want to get into the nitty-gritty today. Why is it important? You know, when do we consider our recovery options, especially our legal options? And, you know, how do we avoid having to go into legal debt recovery in the future? And look, I wanted to, you know, introduce a little bit and say that, you know, look, I've been practicing for nearly 5 years, and in almost the entirety of that time, I've been engaged in legal debt recovery. And happened as early as my first job as a lawyer starting out. I remember my first day, and my boss, you know, comes up to my desk and just drops a big stack of manila folders, files, and says, look at all these clients. They all owe us money over the past 5 years. Get cracking. And taught me a lot of skills. And that was my first venture into the legal world. And unfortunately for me, I was good at it. So, and that's how I am where I am today. And I've been doing kind of specializing in debt recovery and commercial litigation ever since.
Excellent. Secret of success. Make yourself useful.
Make yourself useful. Yeah. Look, no one goes through law school thinking they're going to become a debt recovery lawyer. I think it's unfortunately something that chooses you.
Well, embrace it. You're very good at it. So you mentioned debt recovery. Very important. I think it's probably almost self-evident. I mean, it's cash flow and it's profitability. We're all in business, and we can't run with debts.
Mm.
But let's go into that a little bit deeper if we can. Like, what are the principles you think that we need to adopt and integrate into our business to, you know, make sure that debt recovery isn't an issue for us?
Yeah, of course. And it reminds me of this adage that one of my first bosses used to use when he was talking about debt recovery. And he said, used to say to some of our clients, like, don't issue an invoice that you're not willing to follow up, stand by, or enforce. And really, in so far as that is actually one of the key principles of debt recovery. It's sensible commercial practice to know who your debtors are, how much you're owed, and when those debts are due. It's about not being complacent. It's about monitoring your cash flow and your business. You know, maintaining that cash flow is also being mindful of those debts. You've got to be mindful of when they're due. Being astute about those debts helps you also maintain a reputation with your clients that you're someone who needs to be paid when that invoice is due. Not in 2 weeks, not in a month, not in 3 months, not when you receive a letter of demand. It's you want to have a reputation with your clients that your invoices need to be paid, and that's incredibly important.
Okay, so do I just jump into this gung-ho? Do I need to start considering my legal options the second I send out an invoice and it becomes due and payable?
I think previous bosses of mine would say, of course. And if I said no, they would get incredibly upset with me. But look, my view is that no, we never jump into it straight away. We don't start knocking on doors one day after an invoice is due. I don't think that's sensible commercial practice. I think that we need to have a proper rapport and a relationship and understanding with our clients, and rushing into it straight away and serving letters of demand aren't necessarily the way to go about it. But look, keeping on top of your debtors and outstanding invoices are incredibly important, but it's knowing how long they've been overdue for, whether it be a day, 2 weeks, a month, or 3 months, or anything particularly longer. Communication is incredibly important with your clients. And I don't mean necessarily my clients. I mean for someone who's listening who runs their own small business, whether they supply goods or services. It's your communication and your relationship with your client. If there is invoices that are outstanding or money's outstanding and they're owing debts to you, you need to keep up a series of communication. Is your customer or your client, are they aware of what amounts are due? Do they know why? Has your customer acknowledged that debt or those outstanding invoices? Has your customer outlined how they intend to pay you back? How are they going with settling their debts? Are they keeping up that constant communication with you? You don't want to be stonewalled by a client. You want them to keep up communication with you, and it's much as your responsibility to keep that communication with them as it is them to pay those invoices. And you never let it drift for too long as well. And it brings me to a point that, look, statute of limitations would say that you can't commence legal proceedings seeking to recover a debt that's over 6 years old. So you've got to be astute and timely about it. And it's the combination of two elements, and it's overdue debts and no communication is no bueno. We don't want that. We want to avoid those two things. And, unfortunately, if we can't have those two things together, then we're going to have to start looking at the next steps.
Yeah, we've previously discussed that stonewalling, that no communication, that's the red flag that sort of tells you this is a client that you're going to have to push and pursue, and they're more likely to require a letter of demand or some sort of legal action. Whereas if the client remains engaged, then that's always a good sign, and that's something that would suggest that they're going to be less likely to need legal action to compel payment.
Yeah, exactly. And not compelling them to make payment through legal action is also a good way that you can continue to maintain a professional or even commercial relationship with that customer and client in the future.
Yeah, and not wanting to sound too much like the ATO, but if we were to flip the scenario and we were the debtor, then the lesson from that would be, if we remain engaged with the person that we owe the money to, then the less likely it is that they're going to initiate costly and emotionally draining legal proceedings against us.
Yeah.
Putting your head in the sand and going quiet and hoping that somehow it all works out isn't a good strategy.
No.
And I've never included that in a letter of advice.
No, absolutely not. It is about being strategic, but it's about knowing. It's about knowing and following. You've got to stand by.
All right. Let's say, though, it's not the statute of limitations. We're well within that, but we've hit a brick wall and they're just not responding to us. What are our legal options now? How do we go about getting this debt back?
Well, firstly, you call Entry Group Legal.
Absolutely.
And after you do that, usually the advice that I'm giving to clients is that they say, look, I haven't heard from this person. A debt is well overdue. They're not paying. They haven't said how they're going to pay. What do I do? And it's always the first things first is that we need to issue a letter of demand. And those letters of demands are exactly how they sound. They are letters sending out a demand for payment. And it usually starts out with who we are, who our client is, how our client says that money is owed. Would be for invoices pursuant to goods and services, and how much is owed. And you usually give them time frame. And by usually I mean you always give them a time frame. And it's always
a time frame to respond and to make payment.
That's correct, yeah. And it's always more often than not around about 14 days. But it's always subject to what, you know, the client says and what the client instructs. And they say, look, I don't think this guy is going to pay, but you give them that opportunity. It could be 7 days, or you know that someone is perhaps good for paying and they want to settle, but they just need more time, and you put them under a time period of, say, perhaps 21 days, and you give them 3 weeks. Usually it's about 14 days. And then after that time frame, there's always the consequence. And the consequence is that we will proceed with legal proceedings against you for the recovery of that debt. And that gets into the next step. And this is where things get particularly hairy, and you don't want to get here, but it is what it is. But if a debt is under $100,000, we will be in the Magistrates Court of Victoria. If it is over, we will be in the County Court of Victoria. Obviously, County Court being over $100,000 is going to be more expensive. We go to the Magistrates Court, it's a bit cheaper. Fortunately, the Magistrates Court is usually quite good with resolving these matters in any way they can. So from there, we would issue let's say, for example, you've got a debtor that owes you $50,000 and you want to take it further. We draft a Magistrates Court complaint, statement of claim, setting out the facts and the cause of action giving rise to that debt, and that noting that they haven't paid it and you want seeking orders claiming for payment of that debt, which we say, for example, is $50,000. We go forward and it gets served on the other side, and they may or may not come back with a defence.
Right. So that means maybe they dispute the actual amount, or they say, yeah, you issued the invoice, but you didn't do the work, or it was defective.
Yeah.
Or there's some other reason why I'm entitled to not pay you the money that you say I owe.
That's exactly right. And sometimes they are the most common defences that you will receive. And then from then on in the court, we'll usually refer it to a pre-hearing conference. And those are essentially mediations between the parties. The court's there to identify those issues and resolve them. I think I've been quite lucky in the past, a few attempts where I've been or I've had to recover debts in court, and we've gone to pre-hearing conferences, and more often than not, they have settled, and our client has been able to receive payment and recover their fees. In any event, that it doesn't settle at the pre-hearing conference, we do need to proceed further. And that will go to all the way to a final hearing. And that's usually, and it's not always the last step. People think that the final hearing and getting orders, whether they are or are not in your favour, is the last step. And that's unfortunately not true. There's still more to go. And for example, let's say that we get judgment and we get orders saying that Joe Bloggs owes your client $50,000. It's an order that they pay. It doesn't automatically, the court doesn't, judge doesn't rock up at the door and start demanding payment. You have to take steps to enforce those orders. And I am just going to quickly rattle off some enforcement options that happen after receiving an order. And that could be, there's a warrant for seizure of property. Yeah, we issue a warrant to the sheriff and they go and execute that warrant. And they seize particular goods at a debtor's place of business or residence. They sell them at an auction, and whatever monies they receive, that they then pay, they pay to you. And there could be what they used to call garnishee or attachment of debts or third party, where a particular amount of the company's income or someone's personal income is taken out of their account every week and then paid to the person who is owed money. And there could be judgment installment plans, and so you're under an installment plan to be paid under an order of the court. And then there is the more extreme options, or the more drastic options, which include either bankruptcy or statutory demands and winding up a company.
Okay. So, yeah, definitely more extreme. And you touched on bankruptcy and you touched on stat demands. So statutory demands, might get you to elaborate a little bit further on that. So this is a legal option that is, it's certainly available to you once we've got judgment, but we could also embark upon that at a different stage in the process. And they're also famously sensitive to procedural defects. So just walk us through, what is a statutory demand? What does it do? What's the presumption of insolvency that arrives, and how is it useful?
So statutory demands are exactly as they say sound. It's a lot like the letters of demand. However, this one is provided for under legislation, and specifically the Corporations Act, that you're making a demand on a debtor for payment of a particular debt. And you are entitled to issue one if your debt is over the particular threshold, that is $5,000. And once one is issued, which sets out how that debt arose and what amount it is, the other side, debtor, has 21 days to respond or pay that debt. If they don't, then you can make an application to the court that they be wound up, because then that debtor would be, if it was a company, presumed to be insolvent.
For failure to make that payment within the 21 days.
Yeah, that's
correct. That supports the presumption of insolvency.
Yeah, that's correct. And look, you don't always need an order to issue a statutory demand from the court, but the only time that you would be making a statutory demand without an order or judgment from the court is if there was no dispute about the monies owed. It usually comes with an acknowledgement of the monies owed and the debt. But usually it's always good practice to have an order from the court, judgment.
Right. So it's not suitable to jump into these things if maybe there's a dispute as to whether the invoices were ever issued.
Yeah, exactly.
Or whether the invoices actually reflect and capture the debt that was owed under the contract.
Yeah, I would never be issuing a statutory demand under those circumstances.
Not to be entered into lightly. Mm. Okay. All of this sounds like an expense and a heartache. So we sort of talk about there are two places you never go willingly, and that's to court and to hospital. Mm. And we're talking about going into court right now to pursue these stat demands. It feels like it would be better if the debt never arose.
Mm-hmm.
Like the old adage, prevention is better than cure. There have to be legal strategies available to us to make sure that we never get into this situation, so that we minimize the chance of engaging with someone who's going to end up being a bad debt, and so that we maximize the chance of getting paid early on time, and that we've got collateral if it all falls apart. So what are some of those strategies?
So some of the best strategies, and I think a lot of the time this is where I think your side of the law comes in, Christian, is that when you have got standard form contracts or agreements or things of that nature from a supplier of goods to a customer or a client, is that, you know, where possible, we want to be able to get monies up front. We want to be able to, have the best record keeping available to demonstrate, you know, what monies are owed, when they're owed.
Yeah, so that first strategy, money up front, it's the simplest strategy in the world.
Yeah.
Just cash on delivery, cash up front, no debt arises.
Exactly right.
No risk. If you can do it, if it's suitable with the clients that you're dealing with to not work on a credit basis.
Mm. Yeah, that's exactly right. And look, you can also, and I'll let you get into this in a second, but when you've touched on that point, it's also about knowing who your client is, especially if they're a new client.
Absolutely.
Who are we getting into bed with? We want to be doing credit checks. We want to be knowing that, what other people have security, what other people are there in front of us? Should we want to register security? If we want to be able to register goods on the PBSR, and it often leads to other types of security guarantees as well. They're not always applicable, but in a lot of cases where there supply of goods, where there's a retention of title, or it could be financial services. Guarantees are always a really good way.
Yeah. So point one, credit check. Do a credit check on the customer. Find out about them. You might end up finding out that they are a bad credit risk and you don't want to extend credit to them. You could still do business with them. You just make sure that they pay up front.
Mm.
Simple step. And then you mentioned security. So you might take a charge over their assets, or maybe take a PPS, a personal property securities registration over their assets, or potentially, particularly if you're selling goods to them, then you might be able to get a security interest in the goods that you're selling to them so that you can retrieve or recover that collateral if they go bust. Mm. So an example of where that might be a good strategy is I had a client once tell me a story about how they used to sell musical instruments to a retailer. They were a wholesaler and they were selling guitars and whatever else to the retailer, and the retailer went under, and she was telling a story about someone at the front door sort of trying to obstruct the liquidator as they were trying to get in while they were up the back with the warehouse door open and the van with the running engine as they were throwing stock into the van. That's not a great situation, but what they could have done is they could have sold that stock to the retailer on a retention of title basis.
Mm.
And then that would entitle them to make a security registration on the personal property securities register. And then even if the retailer went under, they would still be secured and be entitled to recover those that stock that had been sold on a retention of title basis. And if they didn't do that, then all of that retention of title stock would just vest in the company and the liquidator would claim it and use it as an asset in the liquidation of the company. So that would be lost. So PPS is a potential strategy. And then directors?
Yeah,
director guarantees?
Yeah. Look, I've issued proceedings before under director guarantees or guaranteeing the liabilities and the obligations of the person who is under the contract. And if we aren't available to, proceed with an action against the company, you can always have it proceed with an action against the director of that company if they do have a guarantee under a particular agreement or contract, which is always incredibly helpful, because it's not just, if you're the debtor, it's not just your company that is owing money, now it's you personally. And it makes it more, people take it much more seriously, and it gives you extra avenues to recover that money as well.
Yeah, it's probably only viable though if you're looking at certain smaller local companies. You wouldn't be asking for a director's guarantee if you were entering into a contract with the large multinational firm.
Not going to get Mark Zuckerberg to sign a director's guarantee.
I wouldn't think so. Apparently, if you challenge him to mixed martial arts ring, you can get him to fight you, but you can't get him to give you a guarantee. But if you're supplying to Mum and Dad Local Co. Proprietary Limited, then you'd ask for a guarantee from Mum and Dad, and it's probably more commercial and fairer to ask that type of business for a guarantee.
Yeah.
Okay. We've gone through the details. A little bit dry. Hopefully we spiced it up a little bit, but we've gone through the details. What I always like in these presentations and discussions are the war stories. Because firstly, I get some campfire stories to tell, but also I get to see sometimes a little bit of carnage. You've been practicing in this area for a number of years. Any good stories?
I have many stories, and it was difficult to choose.
Difficult to whittle it down to just three?
Whittle it down to just three that were the most, the ones that there are a lot of that are interesting, but they're the ones that clients and even myself learn the most valuable lessons in cash flow and debt recovery, or even how to avoid debt recovery. And it I think this was in my it was in my first role when I was a couple of years in, and it was a just a bit of a mess. There was a guy who ran his own business, and I'm trying to be as vague as possible, so I'm not giving away too much, any confidentiality.
Vague away.
And he really couldn't determine to the extent how many debtors there were and to what value he was owed from those debtors, but he knew that there was a significant dip in cash flow, and his accountants have a look at his books and they do their own reconciliation and they say, mate, there are a significant amount of debts owing to you, and this takes care of your cash flow problem. But the issue is that that cash flow problem cannot easily be sometimes solved by just a couple of letters of demand, especially in the circumstances of this gentleman where a lot of those debts were incredibly old. He did not have any communication. His bookkeeping was not fantastic. And as we touched on before, one of the larger debts was unfortunately statute barred. It was over 10 years old. And,
so the limit is 6. Mm. He'd let it go to 10.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, he tries to communicate with his debtors even after learning about this, but they don't really want to hear from him. Or sometimes they're actually incredibly confused and they don't know what these debts are about. And even sometimes the invoices for these debts were not adequate and didn't properly describe the extent of those monies owed and for what reasons they were owed and for what services and goods he had provided. And a lot of these, there was no, because of that, there's no option but to proceed further, and proceeding further is legal proceedings. And I remember over the course of this, a few months, one legal proceeding after the other, you're communicating with these debtors and some offer you to pay you a very small amount or some not at all. And you end up getting into court, and it becomes very real when you realize that a lot of these people owe a lot of money, but there is no other way to go but court. And it's costing the client a fair bit of money to go through with all of these legal proceedings. And I remember my boss and I having a sit down with him and saying, you know, look, we need to consider our options here. And a lot of these debts we ended up settling, and you compromise. And a lot of the times in legal proceedings, and even before legal proceedings, you do have to be prepared to compromise, or as they say, take a haircut on some of these debts. And it's better than recovering some than not at all. It's about what's commercial. And we settled with a lot of matters, and he got paid some debts, obviously not all of them, but it was better than nothing at all.
Right.
Yeah. So it can be quite difficult, but it was a good lesson in knowing who your debtors are, knowing how much and where they are. Good record keeping was incredibly important, which came at a period that was just far too late.
Yeah. So his original sins were record keeping and timeliness.
Yeah. I think his issue was being too much of a good bloke and having too much good faith in some of his clients and customers who I think kind of just really took advantage of him, which was sad to see, but that's business.
All right. Story number two.
Story number two is an older gentleman who was, I really liked, again, good bloke, but he was far too trusting. He had a company that was a private lender, and he entered into an agreement for a loan facility with someone who was a friend of a friend, who was a bit of an acquaintance. He heard that this borrower was a good bloke, trusted him, and he enters into this loan facility with him, and no security, no guarantee, nothing. He says, you know, loan facility is for X amount, and this is the interest, and this is the date that you have to pay it back. And lo and behold, the borrower defaults and fails to pay back that money when it fell due and payable. He let it drift for a little bit too long because he was so assured that he would eventually get paid. And we ended up coming very close to the 6-year mark, which is, again, the statute bar time limit. So we had to move quite quickly. It became a very difficult because this bloke was not willing to pay. We get to court and it becomes an absolute schmozzle. There is not great record keeping. The other side, being the borrower, keeps alleging that there were all of these, you know, oral agreements and surrounding circumstances that said that he didn't have to pay and that he never owed that money, et cetera, et cetera. And then by the time we even get up to the final hearing, due to all those complexities, we look at the legal costs for our client versus the money, the actual principal of the loan facility that was owed. And they're coming to, they're about to match each other. So judgment is obtained. We are successful. But unfortunately, enforcement was very difficult and it was like getting blood from a stone. The bloke, unfortunately, had very little. And so it was always a very big lesson where I think almost every phone call I had with this client was like, you know, I wish I would have gotten some security, or I wish I would have had a better loan agreement, or I wish I would have been more astute about who I was doing business with.
And it's a good point, because if someone's not paying, then they're presumably not paying because they don't have the ability to do so. And the longer you let it go, the worse their situation might get. If someone's falling behind, then, you know, project that pattern out into the future. They're going to fall further and further and further behind. So there's going to be less and less and less equity to go around the creditors that they're accumulating. So I think we're sort of seeing a common theme there. We're looking at that lack of records and timeliness being determining factors here.
Yeah, exactly. And I know it sounds a bit of a tough balancing act, because we're saying let's not issue a letter of demand 30 minutes after the invoice is due, but also at the same time we do need to be on top of not letting these debts.
Yeah, strike a commercial balance.
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay. Does it ever work out?
It does. It really does.
Do we have a story to prove it?
We sure do. And I thought I would finish on a good point. It was a client that I'm sure that Christian will pull me up here. His occupation, his vocation was a viticulturalist.
Yeah, is that right? Translation, please.
He's a wine guy. He makes the wine. Is that correct? Wine farmer, the great man.
Yeah, no, that's good enough. We'll go with that.
So he had a very big a farm in the Mornington Peninsula with a lot of winemaking facilities. And he was very involved in his own business. And he kept incredibly good records. And he was an older gentleman as well. And he always had a very, very good bookkeeper as well, which was his son. And they ran the family business together. And I remember I used to see their invoices that they would supply of wine, supplying of goods to certain customers and clients on a repeated basis. And you would see their invoices and you go, there's just so much detail. It's just set out so well, you know, the payment terms, this is how much, this is what it's for. And there's just so much painful detail in there that he just had such a very positive relationship with his clients, and that, you know, when invoices did fall due and people hadn't paid, he would simply make one phone call and he would say, you know, what's going on? And it only took him one phone call to get paid. Other times there were, unfortunately, he couldn't get paid just over one phone call, but he always kept up really, really good communication with his clients. He always knew the situation they were in. They always knew how much they were owing him, and he always said, when are you going to pay? When are you going to pay? And they would set out to him how they intended to pay him back, and we always knew. And when we acted for him, and we didn't act a lot of the time because he was always so good at cash flow and just managing those debts himself. But you would just bury us in the absolute huge information and evidence and all of these invoices and statements. That so when we would have to send out a letter of demand to a debtor, it ended up being the longest letter of demand you've ever seen in your entire life, and all the accompanying attachments and enclosures that come with it, that they would almost always pay after a letter of demand. And even if there were debtors that didn't, and they try to, they sought to defend the debt in court, it always settled very early on, because the advice from lawyers on the other side presumably would have been that, the money is due and payable. This debt is owed and you need to pay.
Yeah, overwhelming evidence obliterates counter arguments.
Yeah, exactly right. And he was always very, very successful in able to obtain even, settlements to resolve, even if he was compromising and taking a bit of a haircut. Because of the amount of cash flow that he had from all of his invoices, for him it was no real big loss, because he was still making money and he was doing well.
Okay, so I think it's time for us to wind up. What I really like about the case studies that you walked us through is that they really effectively show how we can boil down all of these principles, all of these technicalities, down to a few, two or three practical steps that are within everyone's control, that everyone can implement and affect and manage in their own business. So what would those steps be?
The steps are keeping great records, and they're keeping records which will allow you to know who your debtors are, how much those debts are, and when they're due to be paid. Second of all, if we can, is that communication that we can keep up with our clients.
Be proactive.
So be proactive. And it's also, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. We always need to be, if those options are available to you, guarantees, security, money up front, and really strong written agreements. Nothing oral, no handshake deals. We want to be by the book as much as possible. Those are the best things to make sure that, unfortunately, you're not giving me a ring, which is heartbreaking for me, but also at the same time, you are always getting paid for your goods and services.
Excellent. It's been a pleasure, Liam.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. And we hope everyone at home enjoyed it as much as we did. It's always a pleasure to bring this information to you. And if there's anything that we can help you with, by all means, please feel free to reach out to Aintree Group Legal. We'll always be happy to have a chat with you. This has been Plant, Grow, Reap. We look forward to speaking with you next time.
See you later.